So next we're going to talk about TEVs or TXVs. The TXV is a thermostatic expansion valve. So before we had the fixed orifice metering device, which is just simply a fixed hole that went to a distributor. Very simple device, but due to condition operations, these can very quickly become inefficient and ineffective. This is a thermostatic expansion valve. We still have the distribution tubes, a distributor, but now we have valves that actually move up and down. This is going to control the flow of refrigerant and adjust to its conditions. This one is the one that's we really like. This one's really going to work in a variety of conditions. These are the superior over the fixed orifice, as long as they're installed correctly. Most people that don't like these don't understand how they work and didn't install them correctly. Once they're installed correctly, they work absolutely fantastic. So it's a TXV thermostatic expansion valve. And some people call this a TEV for thermostatic expansion valve. Some people grew up learning it with the X for expansion. Some people say no, it has to be E because the word expansion starts with E. I don't really care. I try to use them as interchangeably as I can so you know what they're talking about. But if somebody says a TXV, TEV, you need to know that it's the same exact thing. It's just thermostatic expansion valve, thermostat E expansion valve. It's same exact thing. So no difference in it, but it is a thermostatic expansion valve. And what's cool, this goes in the same spot. If I have my fixed orifice metering device, and the unit came with one of those, before I installed it, I could actually undo this fitting. I could drop out that fixed orifice metering device. I don't need that. And I could actually thread in the TXV is made to go right where that fixed orifice metering device was. And it's a much more superior expansion valve. So what's really cool about this, we notice there's some extra pipes over here. So this is the liquid line, then it goes into our evaporator. But this is a sensing bulb. It's going to sense temperature, and this is a pressure. It's actually an equalization tube, but it's going to measure pressure. So what it's going to be doing is measuring the actual suction line temperature. It's also going to be measuring the suction pressure. It's going to convert that to basically temperature through spring pressure. So what it's doing is it's monitoring the actual suction line. Have we talked about anything that monitors the actual suction line? And we haven't talked about anything that monitors the suction line, but we have talked about the actual suction line temperature. If we take the actual suction line temperature minus the suction saturated temperature, PSAT converted temperature, we end up with superheat. So what this is doing is measuring the superheat as it comes out of the evaporator. So both of these tubes, this one will be mounted externally, this one will be attached to it, it's monitoring the suction line coming out of that evaporator. So it's monitoring superheat. It's trying to monitor superheat. So if it's trying to monitor superheat, what it's really trying to do is maintain or keep a steady superheat. Now, a friend of mine, Jamie Kitchen, works with a very popular manufacturer, Danfoss. He doesn't like them to be called a constant superheat valve for good reason. But for the first step while we're working with this, if everything is working correctly, if we have enough airflow, and if we have the correct charge, this system, what it's going to try to do is maintain a constant within a range superheat. So if this is working correctly with the correct airflow, all operational corrections, it's going to try to maintain superheat. So it's going to open and close constantly to maintain superheat. So if we find that this evaporator is optimal conditions is right here, it tries to keep that much saturation happening. So if my refrigerant starts boiling away too fast, it will open up and I end up with saturation here. If my evaporator coil starts to flood and overfill, the valve will close and keep my saturation right about here. It keeps the evaporator coil with the correct amount of refrigerant regardless of what the outdoor temperature does. It keeps it with the right amount of refrigerant regardless of what the humidity does. It keeps the evaporator at the right amount of refrigerant regardless what the indoor temperature does within a reasonable degree. So what this is doing is maintaining and trying to maintain a constant superheat. So I like to call it a constant superheat valve, even though technically there's a lot more science that goes behind these than that, but it tries to maintain superheat. With a fixed orifice, my superheat could be as 40 in one day and be correct, or as low as 5 in another day and still be correct. This says it doesn't care about the conditions. It's going to try to maintain a constant superheat no matter what. Now, what it tries to maintain, roughly, and every manufacturer is different, and many of these are adjustable, it tries to maintain a superheat of anywhere from 8 to roughly 16, depending on where you measure it. It tries to keep the superheat there. So if you give this metering device, which if you notice, it's a lot easier to identify. We got the flying saucer head, we got the big valve body, we got extra tubes coming off of it. If we want to make sure this is working right, we need to first give this enough subcooled liquid through the liquid line. So if I feed this metering device enough subcooled liquid and it's working correctly, it will maintain superheat for me. So when we're working with a TXV or TEV, we want to focus more on subcooling. I still want to check the superheat to make sure it's doing its job. But first, I want to pay it enough refrigerant. If I pay this enough refrigerant, it should be maintaining superheat for me. Imagine if you're being paid enough money to do a job. Are you going to do that job correctly? Now, if you're a manager, would you just assume that your people are doing their job correctly because you're paying them? Or do you want to check to make sure they're doing it right? So with the subcooling, it's the same way. I want to first make sure I'm feeding it enough subcooling. If I'm feeding enough subcooling, it should be maintaining superheat for me under reasonable conditions. So if I'm not paying in enough refrigerant, then I don't have to worry about what's happening over here because it's not going to be doing its job. I have to first make sure I'm paying in enough refrigerant. So on subcooling, it tries to maintain a constant superheat, so we need to charge it. We need to focus more on subcooling. Now, anytime you're charging a system, you want to go with the manufacturer specifications. If they have instructions for how they want it charged, that is always priority. On a tag of a unit, if it has this type of meter device, it'll usually say inside on that tag, indoor TXV subcooling. And on that tag, you want to see what it says. Maybe it's 8, maybe it's 11, maybe it's 10, maybe it's 14, maybe it's 15 degrees of subcooling that they want, but the manufacturer's tag works. On this unit, we've looked on the tag, there's not one there. I really need to call the manufacturer or look online and see what they recommend. But as a general rough rule to get you out of a tight spot, if it's on the weekends, it's late at night, most people generally shoot for a 10 degree of subcooling. We shoot for a 10 degree of subcooling. So that's where we want it to be. That's what we call our target. Now this is only if you can't find that information anywhere else, but a 10 degree subcooling with this kind of meter device. I'm getting my liquid saturated temperature, PSIG converted temperature, minus my actual liquid line, and that's what's coming to my metering device. That's how I find what my subcooling is. I need to see if it's how close it is to this 10. Now, maybe it's higher than 10, maybe it's lower than 10, but that's what it is I'm looking for, all right? So when we have a TXV, we want to charge it more by subcooling. So let's say that our target is 10, and the subcooling I'm working on, when I check this unit, I had a subcooling of 2. So I had a 2 degree of subcooling. So my subcooling is lower than 10. So we would call this a low subcool. And it's a subcooling liquid. So if I have too low of a subcooling liquid, let's just cut out the subcooling, too low of a liquid, not enough liquid, we would call this a starved condenser. And subcooling is always representing a condenser. So in this meter device, in this unit that was just running, my subcooling is low. That means there's not enough refrigerant in the outdoor unit. So if I don't have enough refrigerant in the outdoor unit, I need to look at the whole system. Now also, if we looked at the superheat, our superheat was too high. So we had a starved condenser and we have a starved evaporator. We know that we're low on charge, which means there's going to be a leak. We need to look for that. So low subcooling means there's going to be like, let's say my subcooling is over here at 15 degrees. It was too high. My subcooling is too high. We call that a flooded condenser. That means there's too much refrigerant in this condenser. There's too much here. Now, I don't just want to jump to conclusions and think it's overcharged. I still want to check my evaporator and see what's happening. But with a TXV metering device, I want to look mainly at subcooling. This is what I'm going to look at more. Subcooling. Make sure I'm charging it enough liquid refrigerant. I still want to check superheat, but I'm going to focus more on subcooling first to get that fixed, and then I can look at superheat and see what it's doing, see if it's doing its job. But this meter device is great. It adjusts with the conditions. It tries to keep it within a range on the Superheat no matter what's happening. Imagine it like this. Imagine on your car, if you took a piece of wood, and on that piece of wood, you somehow screwed that into the gas pedal where the gas pedal would not move. And so now you're driving your car and you cannot give it any more gas or less gas. That is this kind of metering device. So imagine you're going on a road trip and your car is going to go only so fast. Now you put more people in the car. As you put more people in the car is gonna slow down, right? You're only giving it so much gas, you got more weight, it's gonna slow down. Now imagine you're going up a hill. You're gonna slow down even more. You may barely be able to make it up the hill. On the other side of the hill, just all those people in the car, you're going down the hill, you're gonna be going fast. You may be going way too fast. You have no control over it, but that it's given the same amount of gas no matter what. Maybe you're in a school zone, it's going the same speed. Maybe you're in the interstate, it's going the same speed. You can't adjust the speed. It's not ideal, right? Would anybody want to buy a car like that? Well, that's our fixed orifice metering device. And people like these because it's cheap. It's a fixed orifice, a little bitty piece of brass there. This is our thermostatic expansion valve. Let's think of this like cruise control. You want to set this, you want to go 55, you set it for 55. You put more people in the car, it opens the valve. Let's say gives it more gas, so the car goes at 55. On the other side of the hill, when you're going back down, it gives it less gas, so you're maintaining that 55. This tries to keep you going the same speed, regardless of what the conditions are. This is our cruise control for air conditioning. This is going to have that system work so much better, so much more efficient. And under laboratory conditions, they check all these at the exact same conditions. They can make that hole and this hole be the same temperature. So under factory conditions or lab conditions, they get the same numbers. But in the real world, when the outdoor temperature goes up and down, the indoor temperature goes up and down, humidity goes up and down, this is not what you want. This is going to be really what you want, especially under more extreme climates. So this is our thermostatic expansion valve. It costs more. It's really only practical to install when the system's new or you're already doing major work because you have to take all the refrigerant out to get to it. But this is a superior over this type of metering device. There are many other types of metering devices out there. These are just your two most commonly used. And at the beginning, we just want you to focus on just those right now. Thermostatic expansion valve. Some people call this a TXV. Some people call this a TEV. It's the same thing. It's still a thermostatic expansion valve. Some of the manufacturers print on there TXV. This one prints TXV. Another manufacturer may print TEV. Same exact component, different letters they're using means the same thing. But that's a thermostatic expansion valve.